Hi, this is Dr. Carl Goldkamp. If you're interested in learning about the ketogenic diet like I was, to save my own life, then this is probably the podcast for you. 8 years ago, I knew nothing about it. 6 years ago, it saved my life. 3 years ago, I started researching and talking with some of the authorities in the field and attending medical conferences about this to understand why and how keto so dramatically changed my and my wife's Judy's lives. The purpose of this podcast is to share our journey of discoveries with you and understanding how keto is so effective in improving so many different conditions, from obesity, epilepsy, diabetes, infertility, MS, Alzheimer's, heart disease, to name a few. So take a step away from all the hype you've probably heard and roll up your sleeves with me and join me weekly to explore this living miracle that anyone can access. We'll talk science, we'll talk food. We'll explore its history and evolution to today, which is that the sheer wonder of the ketogenic way of eating has changed untold number of lives, unlike anything before it. And in case I forget to mention it, please join our Facebook group, Keto Naturopath. Hi, this is Dr. Goldkamp, and welcome back to another episode of the Keto Naturopath. Today's topic is going to be, what would I do differently now if I started keto today as opposed to 6 years ago? A lot has changed, both in terms of knowledge, but also in terms of technology. So I thought I'd cover some of those things. Might be kind of technical, but I'm assuming that people who have been listening this long have covered a number of the previous, listened to a number of the previous episodes. So you have a pretty large context of what I'll be talking about. Okay. And if I get to certain topics, I'll simply refer to the fact that they were covered, and feel free to listen to those podcasts. All right, so let's get started. Well, the reason we started, by the way, I'm not here to sell you on the ketogenic diet. This whole premise for my keto naturopath is to bring you along in my journey. That's the difference here. It's not even monetized. For better or for worse, it's not even monetized. So this is information, ideally, that you can use and that we've used. And so I'm coming from a medical perspective. I'm coming from a naturopathic doctor that did not include this in my practice. And to me, that's like, really? How did I miss this? Well, because I think there's a huge prejudice in naturopathic medicine, at least then, and I think probably still now, against the ketogenic diet. It was referenced obliquely if you had patients that were epileptic. And then it wasn't covered very well. You know, maybe they covered it for an hour in some particular class. So it's not much better than MDs would get, but we understood the biochemistry a lot better. That was something we thoroughly had to understand. So maybe perhaps we didn't need to cover it as much. So given that I was not really exposed to it, wasn't in my consciousness, I certainly did not ask my patients to go through it. And the only way I got introduced to it and learned about it was through personal need. You know, Judy's situation, she had a brain tumor. She had a meningioma removed in a 12-hour brain surgery. I had extreme Crohn's and ulcerated colitis that I got through the stress of the previous year. Mother's death, brother's death, Judy's brain tumor. We had to file for bankruptcy, so my gut blew up. So given that, we had some pretty dire choices. So it's amazing when somebody puts a gun to your head how your thinking changes. And that's pretty much the analogy of how we were. You know, time to change, as much as I thought I was a fairly knowledgeable naturopathic doctor, certain things were not helping me. So I did explore a lot about the microbiome. That's sort of the obvious thing, obvious place you would go for gut issues. And I learned a lot about that, you know, biome testing, FMT, et cetera, et cetera. Traveled internationally to go to gastroenterology conferences, got to know and talk to and exchanged with emails and texts and so on and so forth with the experts in the world, Belgium, Canada, Australia for sure. And that was a great start. I don't think that put me into complete remission by any ways. It took me out of acute, but it did not cure me. So along comes a ketogenic diet that started with bone broth for the most part, thinking that was soothing for the gut. And from bone broth led me into ketogenic diet before any of these medical conferences were out there. So I read the books that were on low carb. That was interesting. Started reading a lot myself, and it looked like there was good logic to that, but there really wasn't a how-to book. And it was innocent. It was a more innocent time then, and since then, commercialism has come in place, and you have a lot of extreme views, you have a lot of untruths that are out there, and you have a lot of commercial manipulation or omission of the truth and a lot of keto stuff. Okay? So when we got started, first it was about, you know, measuring your food and finding out how many carbs you were actually having per day, and you had to measure food. How many carbs are in a salad? Well, before we started using any app on our phone, we had to look it up the hard way. So it was pretty archaic. And then we got into MyFitnessPal, which was helpful, and then we went over to Chronometer, so we could then start calculating some of these macros that we'd been reading about. In terms of taking your glucose readings from a glucometer, that was something you could buy at CVS and get the strips and the lancets and go to town on that. In terms of ketone meters, there was really only one. I think Abbott had the only one out there at the time, and then Keto Mojo came along and did a combo. But at the time, the strips for your ketone reading, blood ketone readings, were over $10 a strip. So it wasn't something you were going to do a number of times per day. And Keto Mojo single-handedly got the price down on those strips to under a dollar. So that's amazing. So when people start now and they go, oh, the strips are expensive, you have no idea. You have no idea. So anyway, we started with that, getting the macros down and primarily on reading. And our goal was pretty much from the get-go, the medically therapeutic ketogenic diet at 20 grams per carbohydrates or less per day. And then it came to how do you calculate your protein, the protein amount that we pretty much settled on. I forgot where we started. We've settled on, you know, 1.6 grams of protein per kilogram of carbohydrate. If you have any questions on that, see previous podcasts. Also, there's plenty of documents in the file section to our Facebook group called Keto Naturopath. So that's where we started. And then we sort of say, well, what kind of fats should you use and so on and so forth. And now I think we overthought a lot of that. I don't think it has to be that complicated. I would say the premise I would put, so if somebody showed up, now we've coached a number of groups that come through, probably well over 100 people. And I now speak through other lives as well, so looking through the lens of their eyes as well. And I would say the first thing that really needs to be conquered is getting people back to eating whole foods, so away from processed foods. So those are the big fork in the road is processed foods to the left and whole foods to the right. And I don't mean the store. So whole foods are green leafy vegetables, things that are from earth to you in terms of those carbs, from earth to you in terms of animals, that's fish and poultry and eggs and steak and organ meats. And so that's pretty much what we consume now, pretty straightforward. And then you can use or make whatever you want. But that's whole foods diet right there. It's whole foods diet. It's not like I'm going to go buy keto chocolates. I'm going to go do this. I'm going to do that. Forget about it. Just don't eat out of a package anymore. And so probably a better example of processed food is something like Captain Crunch or over salted nuts and so on and so forth. I mean, they drive an addiction. So processed foods drive an addiction, whether it's just a carbohydrate addiction or if it's about all the additives. They are designed to drive an addiction. And even if you concentrate just salt and sweet and fat together in various ratios, you will find it overstimulates you. That was never found before, and now it's a processed food. It's not from earth to you. Perhaps that first goal is too much for most people listening. They're looking for the hack, for the supplement or two that's going to change their life. I'm not going there, so stop listening now. I'm giving you the truth. And you really have, so whole foods is something you have to do. We obviously are oriented that already because of our way of living. The second you're going to have to think in terms of your own diet is about addiction. What things are you addicted to? Is it alcohol? Is it coffee? Coffee would probably be in my life. But just acknowledge these things. But most people are going to say there's two or three foods they have to have, and it's not just chocolate. It's going to be a certain kind of chocolate. And I would ask, if after you've identified that, say, why is that important to you? Why is it you can't let go of that? You've got to be somewhat conscious about your diet. And I wanted to read you something I put in our Facebook group about diet in general. And this is kind of the premise from which everything flows. And I'll read this to you, and I think it will be helpful, okay? And it's basically Tough Love It's tough love on diet advice is how I referenced it. I've often thought that through all the patients and clients whom I've counseled and coached about their diet over the years, it really comes down to this. You really can't talk about diet without talking about suicide. Ouch. That's the heart of it. Your diet is either fulfilling you nutritiously, metabolically, or it is killing you. Rather, you are killing yourself, technically. Some parts of that conversation are easier to point out. Don't consume highly contaminated foods with pesticides. Eliminate junk food. But other parts of the conversation are not. Most people who ask for dietary advice really want to have their view endorsed, sympathized with, and confirmed that they are doing all that can possibly be done. They really want a sympathetic pat on the back, a hug, a blessing, a kiss on the cheek. Dietary changes are hard for many, for nearly all. For most of us, we had to learn to be taught what the better and often more cumbersome choices were and implement them through our own trial and error. Or if you were like me, required to clean everything on your plate at dinner, regardless of what was on it, primarily because my parents lived through the Depression and still felt that sting of fear of food scarcity, they remembered when times were really tough and made sure we didn't forget about either. The steps between knowing and doing are miles apart, different countries, different mentalities. The real problem for all of us today is that the standard American diet is not healthy and by default dangerous, if not very dangerous, which brings us back to the uncomfortable realization that by making no changes, improvement via the above effort, one is left being a loyal follower of a dangerous diet. I call that a slow, self-inflicted death, a suicide. Today, you can't look for the easy answer, the hack, the supplement to do this for you. You have to consciously choose to participate, to learn. And yes, this isn't something our parents or grandparents ever had to do, but we must do it. The alternative is a grim, slow decline. I've seen this. I've watched this. It's the inevitable flow of declining health towards progressive enfeeblement that most certainly can be avoided. Up to you. So that's the premise from which I come from. That's how I see diet. That's the big deal. So diet isn't just diet. It's choosing life or it's choosing death. And however conscious you want to be, a degree of consciousness is required. So that's why. So as we're entering into the ketogenic diet, it's a degree of consciousness. That's an ingredient. We did it out of necessity. I hope that for whatever reason you're coming into the ketogenic diet, that you're doing that as well. And so whether it's weight loss or some sort of autoimmune condition or all these other conditions that can be addressed by the ketogenic diet. And no, there isn't a lot of information on that outside of neurodegenerative diseases, epilepsy and ALS and MS and Alzheimer's, et cetera, the world is new and it's just being explored. And it's amazing how many specialized conditions can be addressed by the ketogenic diet. Okay, so we then learned chronometer. We learned how to map out our macros and so on. And periodically, we would take our glucose readings. And very rarely would we take our ketone readings because it was really too expensive. So today, I would still say, do the same thing. I think that's important. I think you should track. Not forever. You should do it for the first couple months. Make it a routine. If you really want to do this, you got to do this. If you're looking for the easy way, wrong podcast, sorry. But what has changed, in addition to the chronometer, is a continual glucose monitor. They used to be very, very expensive. And then Abbott came out with this thing called Freestyle Libra, which is like a little cartridge that you put on the tricep side of your upper arm. And it doesn't directly measure your blood glucose, but it measures it indirectly. So it's not like what they call a Dexcom, things that are $6,000 and $7,000 to buy. This will cost you at most $75 for the meter. And if you have an iPhone 7 or above, you don't have to buy the meter. And then each cartridge for us costs $35. You have to ask your doctor to prescribe it to you, and you don't need to be a diabetic. You just simply say, hey, will you prescribe this for me? And you go pick it up at CVS. And if he needs a reason, which you don't, because it's not a drug or anything else, that's just say you want to track your blood sugar readings. So why is this important? It's really interesting. It really gives a transparency because up until this point, you've had all these different people pitching their version of keto, lazy keto, clean keto, carnivore keto, vegetarian keto. Well, that's fine. The idea of ketogenic diet, now let me get you into some terminology. So you've heard low carb, high fat. So low carb, high fat is a general reference to obviously low carb, high fat, as opposed to the American, standard American diet, which is high fat, high carbs, and moderate protein. I'm just going to call it moderate protein. Okay, so low carb, high fat really is about, in terms of a terminology, is 100 grams of carbs or less a day. And very low carb, high fat diet is 50 grams of carbohydrate a day. And so a medically therapeutic ketogenic diet is 20 carbs per day. So a ketogenic diet, medically therapeutic ketogenic diet, is a low carb, high fat diet. But a low carb, high fat diet is not necessarily a ketogenic diet, right? So if you're having 100 carbs a day and you're technically on a low carb, high fat diet, that might not be low enough for you to get into nutritional ketosis. So that's the difference there. And that whole variation that people like to really stretch beyond belief, if you ask me, is what they call carb tolerance. We started at 20 grams or under, and now we're even less than that. And how, when we work with people, if they feel, well, that's too much, I say, all right, while you're working with me, this is what we're doing. After you stop working with me, you can start increasing your carbs and you can track what happened. But the problem with starting easier at 100 carbs a day, you may not get the effects and people are probably not going to want to continue. So start low, get the effects, see the change, and then it's up to the person. But at least now they know how to track and they know the variables and they know what they've changed and why they aren't getting the results that they wanted to get. Okay, so that's the Freestyle Libra. And let me give you a real life. So I said it makes your ketogenic diet much more transparent. So we're pretty much carnivore. And when I say carnivore, we're consciously no extra carbs other than that comes through meat, fish, eggs. So that's us. And so we did get the Freestyle Libra, both Judy and myself. Mine ended up being defective, so I have yet to actually use mine, but she uses hers. She's a good week into it, and each cartridge is 14 days. It measures things every 5 minutes it measures. And so it will transfer this graph to your phone or to the meter that you have, and then from there you can transfer it onto your laptop. And what's interesting is, so we went out last night just to a burger place. So they have interesting burger. It's called Beer Army, if you want to know. Didn't have a beer. And so I had my hamburger, and it did have a little dairy on it and some fried onions and so on. So I'm not phobic about carbs, but we just don't have them in our house. So I had mine. I liked it. That was pretty much it. And so Judy had her burger, and she had a side of sweet potato fries. And so she had 4 sweet potato fries, certainly wasn't going to have the whole thing. And she did a before and after testing. So before she started eating, she tested, and it was 70. And we'll go over accuracy in a second. And then 50 minutes after she had her sweet potato fries, went up to 130. And then it continued to rise for a couple hours after that. So that's significant. So now you think about how potatoes and sweet potatoes and so on were considered this resistant starch, and they were good for you to have, and it's okay for you to have that. Well, right now, it's according to my understanding of these numbers, that's now bullshit. Now let's toss that sucker out. I always thought that was really bizarre. So now we know that they are clearly glucogenic. They create glucose. They increase your blood glucose levels. And so it makes it more transparent. So a lot of these diets say, oh, you can have this, you can have that. And they know that most people don't take their glucose readings on a regular basis before and after. That's really asking people to do too much. But for this tracking mechanism, that puts it into a whole new ballgame. You get to see what affects you immediately or within a couple of minutes. So now the accuracy, it even says it's off by 10%. So what we've done when it goes down low, or what Judy has done, it goes down low to 60 or so on, you'll test with, the meter is also a glucose meter, glucometer, even though we have our own. And so you measure it. And so when it read 60, she measured it. It was actually in the 70s, which was pretty ideal for her. So, and also when it was, I think it reported 140 when she had her sweet potato fries, it actually was 130. So what you're looking for is the pattern. So the pattern is correct. The numbers may be off. So when you see, and it will graph it out for you. So you get to see, for instance, if you have a piece of pizza, perish the thought, if you really are on a ketogenic diet, that would be kind of inappropriate, but you did. And you wanted to know how it affected your blood sugar. Well, you would see probably like Judy saw, 130. But what you'd find is that an hour later, it's probably 230. And 2 hours later, it's probably 300 plus. 4 hours later, it might be maybe even 400. So these things continue to rise. And so people would not have seen this as conveniently, as immediately as they would, you know, wearing the Freestyle Libre, the CGM, continual glucose monitor. So it's a real breakthrough and it's very helpful. So that will, whatever keto plan you think you're on, and if you think you're keto, this is going to say you're not keto. You know, the objective of being on a ketogenic diet is to produce ketones, duh, and to be in what they call nutritional ketosis. So this now gives you the reference range for your glucose, and it's very, very, very helpful because from there you imply what your insulin is, and you can guess what your ketones are, or you can certainly measure them. So that's a big deal. So I would definitely do Freestyle Libre, and it's cheap enough, and it really allows you to understand what you're doing and to be very transparent about how food affects you. So if you're the type that's looking to wing it and just doing it without all these complications, then ignore these suggestions. My focus is get the data, lock yourself in for a couple months, learn how to do this, and then be free. You know, you've learned all the lessons there are. You now know how things affect you. You know how you had to go through and measure some food initially. You know, find out about carbs and so on and so forth. Well, all that's behind you. You don't have to do that anymore. So that's a big deal. Okay, we talked about terminology. And where we are personally now is what I would say snugly carnivore, in the sense that, and people use that word a lot, yes, we eat a lot of meat. We also have a lot of organ meat. So I eat liver, a form of liver. We make a liverwurst for ourselves. So there's some liver I can have every day. And liver is very important. And so if one is keto and they're just doing meat and they call themselves keto, I call them stupid because they are going to be in a nutrient deficient diet and they got to get smart. And you have to have, you don't have to eat from head to tail, as they say, but you can't just eat the muscle meat. So organ meat is basically liver. Yeah, you can go on to spleen and thymus and all these other things, but very few people do that. That's a little esoteric. I won't discourage you from doing that. It's a little more difficult. Down here in the South, they have a store called Piggly Wiggly, and all those things are actually available. You can do canned pig's brains. Haven't tried it, but it's on my list. Okay, so those are the things that I would have changed. I just want to say, when people ask about what's appropriate for keto, so why would you be on keto? Well, you have to choose what your reasons are. The most common reason is obviously weight loss. And so this is the number one reason people come to see us to be in our program. And because we do labs, we really box them in and saying, you know, these are the things that are wrong with your blood work that you should think about. And why we do this is, one, we are going to address this and make sure that that gives them a little more motivation to stay adherent to, you know, learning the macros and doing this. And once they start seeing the weight come off, it's very impressive, but we need to give them often more motivation. They think that they can kind of wing it. They think that they're going to be getting a certain supplement's going to help them. Supplements are helpful, no doubt, not just in terms of fat burning, which is actually not what we use supplements for, but to support some of their lab work. Look at things, homocysteine, which I've talked about, we address that. Insulin resistance, obviously, your insulin, your glucose, triglycerides, HDL, inflammation. So those are the things that we can bring people up to a more normal range of these particular labs, and it's then easier for them to engage and also to get effects from their ketogenic diet. So that's, you know, we do the metabolic level, we do nutrient deficiency level, we do hormone level. So these things need to be looked at. This is the world we live in now today. It's no longer simple. Unless you live on a farm, that has very little in the way of pesticides and you eat whole foods, the rest of us have to think through this and have to get checked out, per my view. What else can I say? The idea of no carbs versus some carbs. And of those carbs, so we're talking about carbohydrates, we're talking about plants, right? So it used to be, before the world of keto in my life, is you would talk about carbohydrates and refined carbohydrates and talk and tell people about don't do refined, do complex. Now it's about don't do carbs, or if you're going to do carbs, have it be green leafy vegetables. The question comes, well, aren't plants necessary for, and the argument goes like this, plants, I'm going to put it in the positive, plants, people believe plants are necessary because of fiber. People believe plants are necessary because of phytonutrients. And that's pretty much those two. And so on the issue of fiber, that's been debunked. And it used to be, well, I need fiber because I need to produce short chain fatty acids. Well, actually, you don't need to produce that because when you're on a ketogenic diet, short chain fatty acid is called butyrate, and ketone is called, well, you have three ketones, but beta hydroxybutyrate, it's basically, it goes back and forth. So you got that covered. They can interconvert. So the other things that come with plants are what they call anti-nutrients, or things that are actually bad for you, injurious of your gut. And those are oxalates, phytates, and lignans. And you can look those words up, but they bind with a lot of things that are in the plants, and some are actually damaging to the gut wall. So when I ask myself, why am I totally healed from the worst ulcerated colitis and the worst Crohn's that this hospital had ever seen? How is it I'm now completely healed and they can't even find the scar tissue? And I've been endoscoped many times, so it's more than well documented. Is it because I stopped having plants? Is it because I dropped all my carbs? Is it because I have ketones? These are all good questions and nobody really knows. But I do know when you look at people who are very vegetarian-based, so you have vegans, which are only vegetarian-based, they cannot sustain. They need to supplement their lifestyle. They need to supplement their diet. Vegetarians also need to supplement their diet if they're exclusively vegetarian. So what about carnivores? Well, carnivores are the other extreme. They're all about meat and organ meats, by the way, and organ meats. Organ meats, you get your B12, your folate, and your egg yolks. You know, between liver and egg yolks, you have it covered. So what about the argument of, well, phytonutrients? Aren't they, what happened to them? I don't get them through meats. Well, you get them indirectly through you get them indirectly through eating the meats, eating the animals that ate that stuff. They ate the plants. So if I was to argue from, well, you need plants because, what are my questions in the back of my mind that I had wondered about a thing called carotenoids? Carotenoids are the things that give vegetable colors, the reds, the yellows, the blues, the greens. And there's two in particular that have to do with eye health. Carotenoids are big about eye health, and that's lutein, which is yellow. You get it in egg yolk. You also get it in all the yellow veggies. And zeaxanthin, which is basically certain algaes and marine meats, and krill is a supplement you can take. But those are two carotenoids. And I've often wondered, well, do you get enough? Well, if you don't get enough and you're deficient in these two things, you will get a condition called macular degeneration, which means you're losing the vision in front of you. You can only see peripherally. And it happens as you get older, because you've had a deficiency over time, and that's what happens. I wonder about that. I mean, there's no studies that say that people who are carnivores or on a ketogenic diet get macular degeneration, but nor has anybody ever looked, right? So it's one of those things that's not answered, not asked, and not answered, but it's interesting. The idea of fiber, that's dealt with. And then I wonder about vitamin C. And when you drop your carbs, you actually need a lot less vitamin C. So maybe you don't need that much vitamin C and you get the vitamin C through meat, which is obviously little, but maybe you don't need much. So those are my questions that I have that are kind of unresolved. However, I don't have a vitamin C problem, deficiency problem. I don't have a carotenoid deficiency problem. And it's very easy to take supplements in both of those, if anybody wanted to. And it's not a bad thing. Okay, so those are that. My whole focus now, in terms of, I'm still saying before and after, what's different now? What's different now is now I realize that 50% of the people, whether it's from Virta Health talking about their selective group of people that came into their study to reverse type 2 diabetes, did not get any benefit, or we're talking about a hospital situation, let's say through Dr. Westman. He doesn't get more than 50% success rate. This is per both of these people saying it. It's not a sneaky little secret. So it's basically agreed upon that's all you're going to get is 50% success. So what happened to the 50% that did not do well? The 50% did not do well. Well, they call that noncompliance. So noncompliance is like not showing up for an appointment. It's like asking you to go make the coffee and you didn't go make the coffee. You're noncompliant. So that's kind of patronizing. It's kind of condescending. It's kind of saying, well, those 50% of people just didn't get the message. They weren't motivated. Were they stupid? Were they unintelligent? Why were they noncompliant if that was the case? So I don't accept that. I'll say there's probably a percentage. You know, if these people came looking for a benefit, came to you to ask for, to get help, to lose weight or these other serious issues, and they didn't get a benefit, it can't be just noncompliance. And they would come back and they'd ask questions. That's the nature of a relationship. So it had to be something else. And so that's why I do these other tests, and I think I find some extraordinary truths. You know, certain labs that are generally out of range for people, for this particular crowd, and I've already mentioned them to you, they have hormone disturbances. Where did that come from? Well, more than likely, it came from their diet. The other independent factor, which is really important to look at, is stress. I don't mean like just getting angry or being upset at your boss or not liking to do certain things. It's the degree that you have superimposed on yourself a chronic stress. A great book to read on stress, by the way, to understand stress is called Why Zebras Don't Get Ulcers. Why Zebras Don't Get Ulcers. It's in its third edition. It's wonderful. But accepting chronic stress for whatever reason, your job, your family, your finances, emotionally tough situation. You can say in my year, accepting that year of chronic stress drives, it is a high carb diet. So stress equals a high carb diet. What do I mean? When you are under chronic stress, your cortisol is always high. Your stress hormones, norepinephrine, epinephrine are high. But what does that mean? So the cortisol drives elevated glucose. So you are giving yourself, by creating your own glucose, a chronically high glucose, just as much as the person eating donuts, just as much as a blissed out person who eats donuts 15 times a day, or Twinkies, or whatever, those refined processed foods. So now you're equal to them, minus the processed elements, right? Because you're just making your own glucose. But nonetheless, you can drive yourself into prediabetes, diabetes, you can still burn yourself out, and you can even get into type 1 diabetes. So stress is a factor that directly affects your glucose levels, which means it directly affects your insulin, and then all the things that chronically elevated insulin will affect, mentally as well. You'll have early onset Alzheimer's or vascular dementia. You will have cardiovascular diseases. You will have, and of course, diabetes and blood circulatory problems, which is pretty much cardiovascular. So stress is an independent factor. To know that and then to see that in the population that I worked with on their hormone panel and then in their blood work was really interesting. It really brought that home. So how do you treat that? Well, you can do some supplements, but you really have to there's a behavior therapy there. They really have to be aware of what they're doing, and there's different therapies. It can be cognitive therapy, anger therapy, NLP therapy, but there's a number of ways, yoga or exercise. Exercise is actually really a really big deal. And this is one of the things that adding to what I know now and I didn't know before is high intensity training. So if you're really doing HIIT, slow high intensity training, and I won't say that acronym out loud, is that you are breaking your stress. You're self-inducing yourself to high stress. So you are crushing yourself with increased cortisol, stress hormones. But when you stop, you end up getting a very relaxed state. And so that tends to break the stress cycle. That in itself, exercise in general will do that, but specifically HIIT, you know. So if you can do your 5 or 7 HIIT exercises for 45 minutes a week, ideally you could do this in 15 minutes a week if that's all you needed to do. We do a half hour twice a week, so we're an hour a week. It's very important, absolutely very important. I can go into things like sleep and so on and so forth, but that's secondary. So if you're not doing a good, if you're not getting a good night's sleep, it's probably because of stress, it's clearly because of diet, and we've already kind of covered the causes of those things. And I would address the causes before you just go into how you're going to manipulate yourself through whatever means into a better sleep. Has my food list changed at all? And I would say the two foods to be really concerned about would be that are keto foods, quote unquote keto foods. Now remember, let's pretend you are wearing the Freestyle Libre CGM and you now have this list of keto foods. And if you don't know what the keto foods are, you can go into the file section of our Facebook group and you can find it there. Well, dairy and nuts are on that list in kind of loose quotes of being keto foods. So now that you're wearing your CGM, you go have that cheese or that, you know, heavy whipping cream in your coffee. See how that affects you. Now you have that transparency and you're going to know just on the way it affects your insulin. Apart from the fact that dairy is very addictive, and we covered that on a couple podcasts. But nuts, why nuts? Nuts are so, especially if they're peely nuts, especially if they're macadamia nuts. Well, bollocks. I just find that such BS, because you can only have a few nuts and you love them so much that you end up having more and you end up having too many carbs and it keeps you from being in ketosis or pulls you out of ketosis, however you want to look at it. So my reference for nuts is that you buy nuts. You can have all the nuts you want as long as you buy them fully shelled and you have to crack them open like walnuts, pull out the meat. It's going to slow down your consumption and make it more reasonable. Other than that, don't have nuts. They're too easy to have a whole bag and it's addictive food. All dairy products are addictive, especially cheeses. You know that. That's why you love it. So, and also my little axe to grind on dairy is, you know, after 16 years of seeing patients, if I did nothing else but have them eliminate dairy completely for at least 2 months and then reintroduce it, the story people would tell me saying, wow, I didn't know dairy had that effect on me, regardless of whether it was menopausal or MS or migraines or low back pain or arthritis or osteoarthritis or you name it, multiple sclerosis. If you took dairy out, everything gets better. Not completely. Let's say it gets better by half. Well, now you have a smaller target to work on and you can work on other issues in their lifestyle. So now enter good diet, right? We just take dairy out, things get better, and enter in good diet, things should get better even more. So that's the general approach. But it's because I've seen this experience, I just don't buy people going, oh, dairy is such a great keto food. It's never talked about at any of the medical conferences because it's a thorny issue. You want to make things nice and clean. You know, here's our patient population. They did X and they had a wonderful outcome. And then you go, okay, what happens if you take that away? Well, they'll have a more wonderful outcome. What about fats? I would say the one oil don't have seed oils in general. So no safflower, sunflower, and certainly no canola oil. Canola oil stands for Canadian National Oil. It's actually rapeseed oil. It's highly GMO and it's pro-inflammatory. We'll leave it at that. And you can Google all that and there's plenty of information on there about that. But you have fish oil, olive oil, avocado oil. And you can even use, like I use, C8-MCT oil. It is very ketogenic within 15 minutes, but I wouldn't use it as a crutch. My treat is an afternoon coffee with collagen and MCT oil. It just keeps me focused for, I would say, 4 or 5 hours, however long I need to be. The other thing that's changed now, a lot of things are no longer hypothetical. I mean, we have conditions anecdotally still that are being addressed, but you now have Virta Health, which has now shown beyond any reasonable doubt that you can reverse diabetes. You now have clinical guidelines and carbohydrate reduction general intervention for anybody, any doctor to do it. So this is out there and none of that was there before. And so this makes the ketogenic diet not being a ketogenic diet not being a fad diet. Also, there's now plenty of information, in my view, of the uselessness of using cholesterol, total cholesterol as meaning anything, as LDL meaning anything. Triglycerides are very important. HDL, high-density lipoprotein, is very important. So these are the things that have changed. We've talked about labs before, and I would use both these technologies. I would change your food list. I would learn about your macros, set yourself up, and progress. I mean, now you have ways you can really see yourself. And I love the transparency that the CGM, Freestyle Libre, allows you to understand how you're reacting to the food. So when somebody says, oh, that's a keto food, let that issue go. You have that, you try it, and see how you react to it, not just in a moment of time, but see how many hours it takes for your body to recuperate from that keto food, okay? Cheese is a keto food. See how long it takes you to recuperate from cheese. So I hope this has been helpful. I hope this sort of puts you on a positive path of, all right, now I can do this. It's actually a lot simpler now than it was before, and you don't have to get so technical. I love labs, and so that's why in our coaching program, we have evolved very much in the direction of bringing in more data, and I think it absolutely is necessary for some people because not everybody, 50% of the people, do not get a benefit on keto. This is one of the reasons I look at labs and say, you know, this is what we can address, and send them off on low-carb, high-fat diet. Till next time, take care. Hi, this is Dr. Goldkamp. I just wanted to encourage you to send in your questions to drgoldkamp@ketonaturopath.com. Many of you have, and so what I've done with these questions that gotten back to most of the people I email, but some of the questions that were so good, and if they were overlapping to other questions, I would combine them and try to put that into the topic of a podcast, either via one of the micro topics that are covered in an interview. As you know, we cover a lot of topics in any given interview, or some of my own sort of reporting, if you will, on some of these issues. So please keep the questions coming. Feel free to send in an email, and I will get back to you. One thing I want to say, a number of questions have come in which I've given this answer and the email didn't work. So just make sure that you're receiving at the same email that you sent it in. And I think that might have been the difficulty. So I look forward to your questions. I just wanted to make sure that you knew that I'm open to answer your questions. And I think this world of keto is not just black and white. You know, it's nice that it's simple, but it's not simple for some. I'm really trying to, you know, go down as anybody, any of you who have listened to all my podcasts, we started way back when, History of Evolution and Epilepsy and so on and so forth. You know, now we're seeing some tremendous overlap in various mental disorders, such as schizophrenia or neurological disorders that are not just epilepsy. And also just for people in losing weight, it's sometimes pretty complicated for them to engage in keto. And so they need some help. And so that's the whole point of, at least that's what I think I'm doing, is exploring the world of why are there other factors? So in exploring some of those other factors, we've covered addiction, we've covered hormones, we've covered nutritional deficiencies, we've covered certain metabolic lab results, and we'll go further. We'll even get to more on genome and aspects. So these are all just contributions that make for an obstacle for some people to engage easily in the ketogenic diet. This is my belief, and these are the things that I've discovered. And I think other people have discovered some of these things, but not ever put them together. So stay listening, send in your questions, and I will definitely get back to you.